Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
What's up, hustlers? Welcome back. This is Andrew Morgans, founder of Marknology, here as today's host of Startup Hustle. We're going to be talking about events for Amazon sellers. But before we do that, and before I introduce today's guest, I'd love to give a shout out to today's sponsor. Today's episode of Startup Hustle is powered by Fullscale.io. Hiring software developers is difficult. Fullscale can help you build a software team quickly and affordably, and has a platform to help you manage that team. Visit Fullscale.io. Augustus, welcome to the show.
Hi, Andrew. It's nice to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, well, I know you're dialing in from Portugal, and it's later over there, so I really appreciate you getting on the show. I love getting a chance to introduce our listeners. I know we have listeners all over the world, but really introducing our listeners to some amazing partners that are worldwide. And as someone that participated in an Orange Click event recently, I think in June, had a great time being part of that event, virtual event, one of the best virtual events I've been a part of. And if you guys are on YouTube, you should check it out. You can just type in, of course, for me, Andrew Morgans, Orange Click on YouTube, it'll come up. But there's a lot of great speakers, a lot of great content, and a lot of eyes on the speaking. So for me, it makes, you know, it's always about balancing. Is this event worth going to? Is this event worth the expense to go as a speaker? And it's really just about getting eyeballs, you know, on and ears listening to what we're kind of trying to say. So an amazing event. But Augustus, before we talk about just like, you know, Amazon events and everything Orange Click is doing, and even just your overall thoughts on events around the Amazon space, I would love to get acquainted with you a little bit better and our listeners understand exactly who you are. Take me back to like when you first started maybe entrepreneurship or business. Is this something that, you know, was in the family? Is this something that you grew up kind of passionate about? How did you find business?
So at the moment, I'm like 40, maybe 4 years old. And I would say like more serious entrepreneurship started 6 years ago when I started what I'm doing now with the Orange Click. But before that, I was like 15, 20 years, like a digital nomad. I like to travel a lot. It was my passion, okay. Especially when I was still studying at university, when I was 20 years old. So I would maybe study, work a bit, but I also travel, like mostly hitchhiking in Europe and then going to Africa and other countries. And
Stop there just for a second. Okay, so you might not know this about me, but I grew up in Africa until I was 16. I'm a French Canadian that was, you know, raised in Africa. My parents were missionaries there. What parts of Africa have you been to?
I was traveling in the East Africa from Ethiopia to South Africa, half by hitchhiking, half by buses, that route. So it was a nice trip. Yes, it took me like 2 months, and then I lived in South Africa 4 months.
So, beautiful place. I think in my dream world, or like my backup plan, is to end up in Cape Town, retire my family to Cape Town. You know, it's beautiful there. No, that's cool. There's not very many people, you know, that have spent even a month's time, much less several months, backpacking and doing buses in Africa. Definitely gives you a perspective of the world. So I relate to that.
Yes. So I was kind of, for many, many years, I was this kind of digital nomad in my mind and borderless. You know, I just like to explore different countries. I like to stay in different countries. Then about 19 years ago, I met German lady who is now, you know, my wife. So her dream was also to travel the world. So we traveled together for 6 years, kind of living on the road in a tent. In Latin America, I learned Spanish language. And so, and as I say, I was like digital nomad almost 20 years ago, or 15 years ago, literally.
Did that even exist? Did that even exist? Were there jobs online, you know, 15, 20 years ago?
Yes, I was actually a programmer. I was programming websites, but at that time there were no like really laptops, small one for traveling. And what I did, I had like a USB stick for first 2 gigabyte size, and I would have all my files there, and I would go to internet cafe and sit for 8 hours.
Wow.
And I would load from that USB stick all what I need, all the programs to program and upload to FTP server. And then at some point, my wife, when we were in Chile, she organized, appeared these first kind of portable laptops called Asus EEE something. So it was like really small, like two hands big, with like 4 gigabyte or 2 gigabyte space. And it was working for me also to program. Then, of course, I could connect to Wi-Fi, but there was no really Wi-Fi. It was year of like 2008, 2009. So okay. It was not yet established. There was a big culture of internet cafes in Latin America when we were traveling. But this small laptop helped me not to go to internet cafe. I could just locally install a web server and program, and then just bring the, you know, files online.
I tell you, the kids of today, Gen Z, have no idea what you're talking about. You know, those early days, like I was even as a kid in Africa, it was pretty dangerous where we were. And, you know, I obviously got out and about, but a lot of my time was spent, you know, you're indoors by curfew, and you know, I've already done school for the day, and there's not a lot to do. So we had like satellite internet, like in the late 90s, 2001. And I was, as a kid, like just hacking stuff and like, you know, just doing DOS prompts and like, you know, getting in the back door of websites to stream and stuff like that before that. And I can talk to some people now even kind of about some of that process, because I was never a full developer or programmer, but they have no idea what I'm talking about. You know, like being able to just like make it work. You had these big desktop computers, you know, you built them yourself, and it's just a different time back then. So when you said digital nomad, like, you know, 20 years ago, I was trying to imagine what that looked like, because it's really only been the last few years where almost the whole world can imagine now working from home or being a nomad, you know? So before that, if you were doing it, you were rare. It was unique, very, very rare to be doing so.
Yes, yes. It's, you know, especially like you would not have computer at that time, which you can use. So you would need to, if you're traveling, you need to go to internet cafes. But you were talking about 2000, 2001. I remembered I was in 99. I was for half a year. I'm originally from Lithuania, and I was studying computer science. It was something new, you know. I started these studies in 96, and it was something new, this computer science. I didn't know. I liked mathematics, but computer science was on the wave, so I joined. And then I got like scholarship for half a year to study at university. It was a college, not university, in Denmark. So it was like exchange program. So for half a year, it was cool. And I remember in that college in Denmark, everything was so nice. You couldn't sit like until midnight in this college. You have access, not like in my country, which is more limited. And I would sit. I had nothing to do, just dormitory and the college. So I would sit and do something. And you mentioned hacking. I was like also trying to hack like passwords of other classmates, and
yeah,
I managed
yeah.
The emails and email, you know, it's like name and password is name one. It's like,
So beginner, and, right?
And then I was installing some program in different computers in the computer room, and I installed some software which controls somehow through the network another computer, and I'm in the room like 20 computers. I'm sitting at one computer and some Danish student at another one, and through my admin control, I opened for them for him a CD, you know, CD drive. It comes from his computer box.
Freaking
he's
out.
I'm like almost. I cannot like hold laughing, and then I close for him and he's like looking what's happening. I was doing such things.
Nowadays we'd be in jail, I think. right? I met you're from Lithuania? Is that where you're from, or you were just there at the time?
No, I'm from Lithuania.
I met an amazing consultant at the last conference I was at, AMZBs. I don't know if you know him or not, but
Clydes.
Yes. Name, right? I didn't want to try to say it and mess it up, so thank you. But he was very kind. He was very kind. I know it's a smaller country, so I'm sure it's a small network around e-commerce as well.
Yeah.
Okay, so you get the laptop, your wife, what's her name?
Katya.
All right, so Katya comes back with this Asus, you know, new laptop, and you're using that to you know, still code and travel. And you know, Latin America is interesting because in Congo at the time, one of the best entrepreneurs I've ever met was someone from Absolutely Zero. His name is Felix Kobuza. And he started finding ways to build wealth, and now has even sent his kids over to the United States for studies, but with internet cafes. You know, you would pay like 10 Congolese francs or something, you know, to come in, use the printer. And I think even calling home back then was $10 a minute if you were calling the US from Congo, so couldn't afford that. So we would email, you know, we'd put all the emails on a floppy disk and take them home and write more, or like, you know. And that was like common. So I would assume like in Latin America, it's kind of what you're talking about. Just like these little internet cafes everywhere. No one has a computer at home, but they all kind of use the cafe.
Yes.
And so who are you making websites for at that time? Just freelance, whoever?
Actually, it happened that before we started to travel, like really full-time travel with my future wife, I worked at university in Denmark. After I finished studies there, I was doing master degree. After, I finished, you know, 4 years at my home country, I went for 2 years to Denmark for master's, also computer science. And I worked at university a little bit, and I saved some money. My wife saved some money. So at the beginning, we were spending like $500 for two people per month just traveling in Mexico, because we spend money only for buying food, and we cooked ourselves, we slept for free, and traveled, transportation was for free because we hitchhiked. And we had some funds for this kind of activity, but then my friend from Denmark, another Lithuanian student, he says, I have an idea, and I need to program some card website about cards. And we ended up making affiliate website with the cards for American people to, like, somehow in America, it's not not common in Europe, but at that time in 2006-07 in the United States, it was like a big affiliate business where you create a website presenting different bank cards, and if somebody clicks and chooses and signs up, you know, you get like $50 affiliate. So it was his idea, and he asked me to program. We ended up working like for many, many years, like 7 years. So I was programming these kind of websites, getting some passive income. I didn't know it's a passive income. I was like, at some point, I was really fed up with this programming. And I told to my friend, I said, I'm quitting this project. But literally, I was like working sometimes just 2 days a month, just because we were traveling. And when I don't believe that you can travel and work, since I did that, I think it's impossible. Like, you can arrive to a country and stay for 3 months, rent apartment, and then you work and like explore neighborhood, but it's impossible like to move actively and to work. So even for my team, sometimes if I see that somebody is applying for a job at my company now and they are traveling, like, I don't want such person who is like digital nomad, because it's hard to focus when you're traveling.
Yeah, I would agree. So, I think you're right. Like, you know, I build working into my travel, like into my, you know, meaning I'll plan it, But like times have changed a little bit. One, you can hotspot from anywhere. Like, so if you're on a train or you're on a plane, even you can work. Now you can use these downtimes to work whenever I didn't used to before. But the focus part is very real. And I would say that for me, it's it depends on what I'm doing when I arrive there. Okay, if I'm touring museums and parks and you know, the Christmas markets in Germany or things like that, where it's like almost like touristy things or cultural things, I can actually build in work pretty well, okay? Because it doesn't exhaust me. It's not like an event. It's like, it's a little bit of pleasure. Come home and work, okay? Like, you know, you build it in. If I'm doing like music shows or anything that involves like, let's say alcohol, right? Or something with late night, or it just doesn't work because you're already off on your time. And then you're like, you know, you've got like a little bit of distraction, or like it's a bigger commitment than just like popping out to do this or see this tourist thing. And you have to build in, it's almost like build in the travel days. Yeah. So if you can get there in time. So for me, it's like travel. The time that you travel is important. If I can arrive here before Monday, if I can arrive here by, you know, because when are people on calls and podcasts and things like that? So it definitely has to be planned. And I hope, you know, I hope me and my sister, we travel a lot together. Eventually we write an ebook, just like, you know, tips and things we've learned along the way. But I will say that technology advancing has helped a lot. You know, even in Thailand, we had a hotspot that I could get, you know, I wouldn't be doing podcasts, but I could answer all of my emails, do whatever I needed to do out in the middle of the jungle. So I know it's changing, but also that focus thing is very, very real. So unless they're trying to get inspiration, it's not a good thing.
Yeah, I remember we were living with my wife in Malaysia. And we were renting a house. Of course, there was no internet, just electricity. And we didn't have like any kind of, at that time, SIM cards to have mobile data. And we were receiving some friends 1 week. And some travelers came from Russia, some friends, a couple. And Russian guys, they arrived like by taxi in the midnight to our house to sleep. And he says, oh, do you have like Wi-Fi or something? I said, no, sorry, next Wi-Fi is the internet cafe 24 hours a day, but it's 2 kilometers away. Like, you can walk half an hour to it at night. And he just arrived maybe by airplane from Russia to Malaysia. And I said, sorry. And he says like, oh, tomorrow morning I have to deliver. And it's a project for some Russian ministry or something like. And he was so naive that I will have internet. And I don't know, like, I think he somehow figured out something, but it was so unusual still to have these SIM cards
and no internet.
And yeah, no internet is like
you and my dad would get along, I think. He likes going simple and minimal. You know, you just get used to it, and then everything else feels like extra. Okay, yeah. So you're traveling the world. I mean, literally, even in the first 15 minutes of this, I think you've mentioned like, you know, 15 countries already. How did you go from kind of that nomadic, you know, digital nomad, creating sites, affiliate sites? What was the next step?
We actually, I think programming was helping us to survive as a family. And then later, our child is now 10 years old. So, the baby was born. So I was supporting in the first years of when the child was born. We settled down at some point before the child was born. So we kind of were tired of this. It's very stressy, this kind of life traveling, because you have to get used to the new place and set up your system, you know, daily system. So yeah, we were literally tired of these 7 or more years of kind of nomading. And we settled down first in Germany, and then so we lived there at the beginning. But I supported my family by more serious freelance programming. I quit the previous passive income job with affiliate sites. At that time, later I realized it was passive income. I just need to maybe figure out how I can stay in that. But I like announced myself, I want to quit, just because I was really not enjoying the programming.
Yeah.
But later I continued programming just because this was the thing which can bring us bread to the house. And at the same time, I was always exploring like watching webinars, you know, what else people do on the internet. I started to learn a little about these affiliate sites. But at some point, I learned about Amazon FBA. It was so exciting. It was like after maybe 2-3 years of like looking for something else, I really was excited about Amazon FBA. It was 7 years ago. But the problem was that I didn't really have like money to invest. I could invest like $500 or $1,000 maximum. And I learned that it's really impossible. Like it's not worth. But I was following, you know, all the Facebook groups, especially. It was 7 years ago. And I was seeing that people are talking a lot about Amazon Europe, but nobody is talking from like influencers or educators. And at the same time, during that year, when I was interested in Amazon, I learned about another business model, virtual summits. So, you know, when I saw so many virtual summits happening 7 or 10 years ago, at that time, it was still called maybe Telesummit before like video summits. It was Telesummit, mm-hmm. like you listen to audio recordings. And they say, yeah, you just create a virtual summit. It's for free and you make money. I didn't get how you can make money. But apparently you are making money by selling recordings of these free virtual summits, which are limited to listen for free. And I decided, all right, I will combine this. I will do a virtual summit about Amazon FBA in Europe. And I did in 2006 in September. Out of nowhere, like I jumped into the space. I contacted like 6 years ago. Okay. Yeah. And yeah, I was the first to create a virtual summit in Amazon, like a private label space. There were maybe e-commerce summits, but not for Amazon sellers specifically. Yeah. So I was doing this and I got like in kind of after that first summit, I started to get relationship with like Manny Coates from Helium 10, Kevin King, you know, approached me, Franz Jordan from Celex, like all these kind of big companies now, the founders, they started to be interested in what I'm doing and they wanted to be on my next show. And yeah, I started to produce like before COVID, I think I made like 6 virtual summits and I was already tired of this. Mm-hmm. I wanted something new. So in 2019, we did like the first physical event, which was called European Seller Conference in Prague. And we managed to do in 19 and 2020, in middle of the March in 2020 was the second European Seller Conference. But during that year, like when I started with the Prague conference until COVID closed down all the events, we did 5 events in 4 countries, one in Lithuania, one in Amsterdam in Netherlands and one in Israel. So I really was envisioning Orange Click as an events company. So I wanted to do 20 events in 2021. And of course, this passion was killed by Big C. And then we continued doing, concentrating on YouTube channel. And now we're a little bit picking up on virtual summits and we did one more in-person event in June as well in Portugal this year. And probably we'll do a few in-person events next year. But by now, basically at Orange Click, we produce a lot of videos. So about 3 videos a week on our YouTube channel.
Wow, that's a lot.
And since for the last 6 years, in 6 years, we did, I think, 10 virtual summits and 6 physical events. And I think this is our uniqueness in terms of events. Like in the industry, there is no other kind of maybe influencer or company which would focus on doing multiple events and trying different things, because most of the time it's somebody, maybe an agency does an event to kind of attract for brand awareness of the agency. They would do this annual event. A maximum 2 times a year and that's it. Because event organizing is completely different business and it's, yeah, it has a lot of different moving parts. And and also our YouTube channel, I would say it's quite unique because it developed from doing virtual summits. So we at Orange Click, we don't sell on Amazon and we don't teach how to sell, but we bring experts like yourself or, you know, So YouTube channel also became like, you know, just a, I would say, TV station, TV channel, where we talk to different experts, which are mostly service providers, and they educate Amazon sellers and get exposure in some way. So
I love it. Thank you for giving me a little bit of extra color and background behind the company itself and how it came to be. And it makes a lot of sense how you stand out. You know, the Amazon Prosper Show, you know, I think was originally founded by, at least I know, Eitan and Chad Rubin. I think there's a couple others. They ended up selling that and going on to do other things. And this last couple of years, you've seen a ton of events pop up, some good, some bad, some not so great. You know, but you're right. A lot of it comes from trying to get brand awareness or trying to get exposure to who you are and what you're doing. But I am very aware of the work that goes into a well orchestrated and executed event, virtual or not. It takes a lot of collaborating, you know, and a lot of things moving all at the same time, whether it's a wedding or an Amazon event or any number of things. I grew up in a religious, like, you know, environment, with my parents being missionaries and preachers and stuff, so went to lots of conferences and things like that. My parents were just traveling, so just like you grew up in that, or like you were being a nomad, I was a kid that had to go along. I was the kid that was the nomad by default. But got to experience some big events, you know, some small ones. And for me, at the beginning, it was about meeting other service providers. I'd like to take the show kind of to talk about the industry right now as it goes to events. You know, I was talking before the show started, like last year, I went to a ton of events. You know, it's after the pandemic, they opened it up. It seemed like the e-commerce community was the first to like jump at events, because we already have less fear than a lot of other people in that, or maybe not less fear, more courage, I think, because the fear still exists, but more courage to just go do different things. That's why we're in e-commerce. That's why we're entrepreneurs, right? We don't have to listen to corporate tell us what to do, what not. We get to make our own decisions. And so I felt like the e-commerce or Amazon event industry, boom, tons of stuff. And I started getting connected with the industry, meeting other vendors, other service providers. For me, it was never really about getting business from the events. It was about my network and partnerships and service providers and brand awareness, right? But toward the end of 2021, I started feeling just like, you know, I went through 2020 more like isolated by myself, like working on, you know, first in a bad way, in some ways, like, you know, isolated. I'd already been working from home for a very long time. But all of a sudden I'm exposed to a lot of other people, and not in the, because of the big C word, but because just energies, you know, like whenever you're sharing with other people or networking, it's like you're sharing energy and you're exchanging that with a bunch of people. And I found myself coming back home just exhausted, you know, physically and emotionally, just after having kind of had these strong boundaries from COVID and then being exposed to tons of people and energy. I was like, wow, I need whenever I come home, I have to have energy for my team and to build the company and to focus on all the things we need to. And so this year, I said all that to say this, and this year I was just more selective, did more virtual events than just the physical events, because I like to travel. So the physical events got me traveling. But I had to say no, and I had to choose more selectively this year to the events, and just try to be, you know, real specific with, I'm going to this event, this is my intention for the event, and when I get back, like, I'm going to get to work and work on these things. At least that's where I'm at, and I think, you know, some of my colleagues are sharing some of the same things. There's just been an explosion of events. But also, like you, in the early days on YouTube, I saw that there was no influencers. There was no real people talking about brand or manufacturers or map pricing or resellers or how to, you know, essentially elevate your brand on Amazon and these kinds of things. There was only the gurus and the coaches and like the tips and hacks. And, you know, I wanted to essentially, I was very passionate about Amazon and I wanted to tell people the fixes I had found, the solutions, so to speak, for some of these brand and manufacturer questions. And that's why I started pushing out content as well. I since backed off of YouTube, just not because it wasn't working, but more so just needed my focus in another area. But I very much, it felt like we were on, knowing that you started in 2016, like pushing content for the same reasons. It seems like we kind of saw the same opening, the same opportunity. Mm-hmm. What do you like now that you've been out there 7 years now creating events for the space and the industry? What do you see as kind of what's happening in the space, or like where it's going to go? For me, I would love to see the blend of our Amazon industry, our Amazon focused niche, blending a little bit more with general e-commerce and strategies across social media, you know, like social media, instead of having social media conference and e-commerce conference and Amazon conference. I would love to see them start blending together. What's your thoughts?
In terms of events, I think it will continue in a similar way, that some events are more regular, like Prosper Show, and some are like more popping up, and then people see it's just too much work and they don't repeat it. Maybe some people will do just two events and stop it because it's a lot of work. And the same with virtual summits. It's also a lot of work. And I saw in the last years also some people pop up with these virtual summits, especially in 2020. But they think like they can maybe make money or become known or whatever, but it's still a lot of work and they disappear after one event. So in terms of like blending topics, I feel like, yes, for that it might, even now, like people talk a lot about, when they talk about advertising, they talk about TikTok and Google advertising. Now it's even on our YouTube channel, we have few videos about Google ads, and it's quite popular videos. And like, it's, we cannot figure out like why, and not so many people are talking. So basically agencies which are focusing on Google ads for Amazon sellers have a lot of potential at the moment today. And I, for example, one of the events which we did was PPC Congress's event specifically for Amazon advertising, you know, enthusiasts and agencies. And one of the speakers said, because we were now already planning this event, maybe in the next months, and one of the known speaker on PPC in the industry, he suggested, why don't you do something like traffic and conversions, like not only advertising, but to connect, like, and I'm still puzzling how to solve this, because I don't want to become, I don't want the event. I really like this very niche event, like for Amazon advertisers. But if I will start bringing more advertising channels, then it will not be clear for whom is this event. So yeah, maybe it still has to be called like Amazon PPC advertising, but then I have like a side track with additional these presenters just to test.
I would love to give my two cents on that. Okay. Yeah, so before I give you my answer on that, because I'm pretty passionate about the subject, I'm going to give a shout out to our sponsor, Fullscale.io. Finding expert software developers doesn't have to be difficult, especially when you visit Fullscale.io. We can build a software team quickly and affordably. Use the Fullscale platform to define your technical needs and then see what available developers, testers, and leaders are ready to join your team. Visit Fullscale.io to learn more. So thankful for our sponsors. Augustus, for me, I built my agency, Marknology, really out of professional curiosity. As I started digging into Amazon, I just kept discovering more and more and more and more. And I kept saying, okay, this is a problem. I need to solve it. This is a problem. I need to solve it. This is a problem. I need to solve it. 11 years later, you know, here I am. And I have a full service agency. I think what's different in like outside the Amazon world is like, you know, we're working with a Fortune 500 company right now. Okay. And this is very common. They have a branding and content team and then a division, and then they have a media buying team, right? Which is like advertising. Mm-hmm. And they're two separate worlds. They have to work together a little bit, you know, to stay on track with the branding and things like that. But in general, the media buying is very different than long-term, you know, content and branding. Well, so this is difficult as a full service Amazon agency that's trying to help them understand how Amazon works. Now, because I need them to talk, it's like I need the step siblings to get along, right? So I'm having to navigate these challenges. Now, if I'm talking to a smaller company, it's rare that they have the team so divided. And so I can actually talk to a smaller brand, or, you know, a team that might, I might be talking to the founder himself, an Amazon seller, or maybe it's just, you know, they've got a marketing person, they can kind of understand how the two work together. But when you think about, for me, like I started with flat files, helping people solve their listing issues. Then PPC came out in 2015 for Amazon sellers, and I dove in, became an Amazon PPC expert. I was speaking on PPC, everything about it. I loved it because before I could get brands that could essentially change their copy, the title and bullet points, because you had to have brand registry and be trademarked and things like this. Before this happened, the PPC was cheap enough and available enough that you could offset bad SEO, bad listings, with just really good PPC. Okay. Now, as PPC evolved and got more difficult and the game gets harder and things like that, categories get more difficult, I started learning, well, I only want to work with brands that have brand registry so that I can change the copy and images. Because if I change the copy and I have control of advertising, oh man, I can get organic ranking to really work much better. So then the next evolution, images. Okay, so what I saw was, as I started working up market from an Amazon seller to working with like brands that already had existing content and assets, I started seeing the power of really good images. Okay, so I saw my conversion rates go up. I saw my engagement from my ads go up. Why? Because I had a great photo, or because I had good images there. And so, you know, you start learning these things as you go, and you're like, wow, okay, so advertising is important, but really I don't even want to advertise until my listing looks great, until it looks amazing. Why? Because my conversion rate is maybe 10% higher, 10 points higher, right? It's not uncommon to have a well-optimized listing that's 30% conversion rate on Amazon if you're doing it really well. So all these things being considered, you know, it's, you write good copy, you do your keyword research, you launch your listings, you know, you have like maybe the top 10 keywords for each listing, and then it's the advertising that then validates everything. You know, you've got your custom headline images, maybe you've got your DSP images, you've got custom creative, you've got that first photo that needs to be engaging and grab people from the search results. You've got your video ads. And it's also advertising on all the keywords that you wrote in the copy way back then in step one. And it's telling you these 10, of these 10 that you thought were important, 7 are great, 3 are not so great. And then you go back to the drawing board, and maybe you change your content to, you know, to validate the seven keywords that did work. And so it's very much this collaborative back and forth between getting the page right to convert them when they get there, but then getting the ads dialed in. And so for me, the traffic and conversion piece, clever name, but also it's like, I'm trying to educate people that the Amazon platform is a lot different than how there's companies have been set up before, and the teams need to talk and communicate and work together to be the most efficient. So for me, it's a source of wanting to educate, you know, the brands that are at the top end, that this is different for them. And also there's a bit of elements in both. So if I was just an advertising agency, I would be very frustrated to be working with brands that didn't have their images or their copy or their landing pages set up for conversion. So there is a little bit of both needed. At least that's how I feel. You know, I can also see the niche, and like, I just want to come to this to learn. And maybe that's, you know, and a 101 gets both, and a 201 or something is, you know, just the other. Mm-hmm. But I see the need, and I'm liking that people are even thinking about it now, is where I'll put it. I know it's a mouthful, but it's a conversation that I think if you want to be doing great, you got to think about both.
Yes, yes. So, but it's a puzzle how to combine, because if, you know, you start adding, if it's a specific event for a specific, let's say, specialist, and then you start adding these other things, it very soon, this event might be just a regular event like everybody else, you know, it's just different name.
I know. And the difference between the crowds, between marketing and branding and content, versus the advertiser that's more math brain, data. You know, it's a different event in a lot of ways. There's a different conversation. So I have yet to make it to the event you just mentioned before. I haven't been to one that's just for advertising yet. So I'm not sure of the difference. But, you know, it's also the YouTube, I think, that can help you direct what people are interested in.
Yes, yes. By the way, if you know, some people, we are talking about events, and if people really, what happened to me 5 years ago, I was living in Germany and I wanted to visit some Amazon seller event in Germany, and I knew a lot of happening, or in Europe in general, and I couldn't find, I didn't know how to find information what's happening where. And 5 years ago, I started to collect information about all events which is coming in my radar, European events and North American events. And I launched a website 5 years ago, amzsummits.com. So it's like Amazon Summits, amzsummits.com. And we have already, like, in 5 years, 300 events registered in our database. Wow. And we, you know, like, I literally, you know, subscribe to some newsletters. And if I see some speaker is promoting, I'm speaking in this event, I'm like, okay, this event should be on our database. So yeah, if someone is searching for events to attend, I think it's a very good resource. It's for free to, you know, visit and see what events are coming. We recently updated the website and there is a nice map, so you can see on the map the locations. I really envy the North Americans, because you have so many events. In Europe, there are not so many English-speaking events, and there are still events happening in different countries, but Europe is like very, information doesn't travel through the borders. So that's why I'm also keeping my, ears open. And I know some people in Romania and here and there, and some people like send me emails. Oh, here is this event. Maybe you want to add to your database. I think North America is a great place for Amazon events. Even now, yes, in Mexico, more and more is happening.
Yeah, a lot of my colleagues are really pushing Mexico and Latin America, from starting the first like manufacturer trade shows to, you know, hosting events down there. I know a few agencies built their teams in Mexico. So there's a couple strong agencies that are based down there. So, you know, if they've been training staff, they've been training people, the community's been getting built. It's a lot like music. Certain cities, as you travel, certain cities will have a better turnout or crowd for certain types of music, if that type of music has been coming there a long time, and it kind of builds a culture. So I think same with e-commerce. And, you know, I'm here in the Midwest in Kansas City. There's not really an e-com community here. And maybe that's mine to build, but I've been building my community like internationally, you know, across everywhere. Instead of just being stuck here in the Midwest, as far as the community, I want to be like, around. But it's opportunity. So a lot is in New York or in Florida. You know, you'll see a lot of events happening there, a lot of people traveling there, because that's where a lot of the events in the community have existed. A lot of the nomads or the sellers have migrated to these places to be around more community. AMZ Summit. Is that
AMZ Summits, plural? Yeah, AMZ Summits. AMZ Summits.
Okay, is this just for Europe events, or does this also have North American events?
It's mainly North American and European, because these are like the information I get. In the past, when there was something happening in Vietnam, Thailand, we were adding this, but it's more harder to get information about these events.
I'm also, sure post-COVID as well.
Yeah, but it's also, for example, if something is happening in like Vietnam, can be it's in their own language and it just doesn't come to my channels because it's in Vietnamese. But I would love to add it to the website, of course.
Of course.
Yeah.
Okay, so check it out, guys, if you haven't already, amzsummits.com. I've actually found the site already and I didn't know it was one of your sites. I obviously, you know, I searched it into Google. It's one of the first ones to come up for a lot of the events I'm going to. So I'm like, is this their website? I don't know. Sometimes you have better, more information than they do on their own site. So I would definitely be an advocate and say, check that out, add it to your bookmarks, be checking in. You know, it's something I'm always looking into. What events should I be going to? What should my priority list be as a speaker and as an attendee? You know, a lot of times for me as a speaker, I'll go to events, but as an attendee, a win for me is to say, oh, I can go speak at this event and I can learn at this event. You know, so for me, I'm always choosing in that way. Before we wrap up, let's two questions for you. One, advice you have for someone that's starting in e-commerce, that's looking for events to go to, where should they start? Should they just jump on AMZ Summits and you know, go down the list? Or like, what's something you would recommend for some new sellers? Maybe it's the YouTube. And then number two, what's next for Orange Click? You know, what's next on the horizon? And then finally, where can people find you, reach you, connect with you? So one, some advice for a new conference attendee. Two, what's next for Orange Click? And then three, where can we contact you?
So most of the physical events are, you have to, you know, invest. And if you are traveling, you might need to invest ticket and accommodation and trip at least $1,000 or euros. For beginners, might be a big money. And this is what I see when, you know, people come to our physical events. It's, of course, already at the next level, not super beginners. And if you want to, you know, really scale up, I always kind of say, go to Facebook groups, but don't like participate in many. Just choose one Facebook group, one or two. Or maybe if you bought a course, use the group of the students of your teacher. And I myself, in other things, found really big help when I focused on specific group. I was giving myself a lot of help in the group, answering and sharing my knowledge. But then when you are kind of active in the group, you can also ask, you know, if anybody wants to create a mastermind. So it's for free to organize the first set of like 3, 4, 5 connections where you can meet every week or every 2 weeks and brainstorm things. And if you're all at the same level, it will help you a lot to, you know, everybody still knows different things. And if you get someone with a next level information, it will be even like more powerful. So this is one of the like easiest and the cheapest way to get connected and kind of grow quicker. In terms of events, on our website, amzsummits.com, there is a menu called Local Meetups. And there we have a list of 200 meetups, which we imported from meetups.com platform. It's for, you know, and these meetups are all for free. So we kind of manually gathered 200 different meetup groups publicly available. And you can see when, in which place next meetup is happening. So, of course, okay, a lot of things are happening in different places in North America, in US, some in Europe. And this is another very good starting point if you want, you know, meet physically other people doing the same thing. So it's for free and it's probably in your town or nearby. So take, you know, effort and go maybe even 1 hour drive to such meetups.
Totally.
And what's next for Orange Click? Well, my dream is to grow our YouTube channel by bringing more videos per week, bringing more experts to feature more of them. And at the moment, like, I'm also like looking for video hosts. I would like to collect like a European team, like more European people who could host interviews on our channel. If someone is listening and interested, you can contact me. But yeah, this is kind of the vision of growing this kind of neutral platform, which we created at Orange Click for experts to share their knowledge and for Amazon sellers for free to get it. And of course, another good way to learn for Amazon sellers is virtual summits, ours or other ones in the industry. Most of the time they are for free to listen. So it's also a good way to learn, but not to network, because virtual events, it's not really very good for networking. Yeah. So, and if you want to reach out to us, best if you go, yeah, you can watch our videos on YouTube, search for Orange Click. Click is spelled K-L-I-K. And you can go to our website. If you want to write us an email, best you write at team@orangeclick.com. And we will reply whatever you want to share with us and tell us. So, yeah.
Well, Gustav, this is very helpful. Thank you. It's been a pleasure to meet you. And if you guys are going to YouTube to start, you should obviously start with Andrew Morgan's and Orange Click, because might as well start there since you're on my show. Would love to have you guys comment on the video if you're coming in from the show and tell me what you think. It's been a pleasure having you. I'm sure it won't be the last time. I know you're continuing to grow the European, community, and happy to be a part of that, excited to be a part of that in the future with whatever that looks like. You guys heard about amzsummits.com. Check it out. It's where you can find so much information around meetups, events happening in the space, and honestly an authority on what's happening. It's been a pleasure talking with you guys. Before I sign off, once again, shout out to our sponsor, Fullscale.io, helping you build software teams quickly and affordably. If you're looking for developers, that's an amazing place to start. They really have an awesome thing going over there. Simply to look up, go there and look up some of the talent and the features to find someone for your team are absolutely amazing. They have some amazing avatars and things like that. So they're really doing some really cool stuff. It's been a pleasure talking with you guys again. Thank you for your attention. We'll see you next time. Thank you, Augustus.
Thank you, Andrew. Bye-bye.
Startup Hustle's brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time.